Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, Modern Nation? I'm back for
Adele intro.
What's it been like?
I think it's the first time since 2016 for sure.
We're back. I'm back. You've seen a lot of Alex. You haven't seen a lot of me.
But he's still alive.
I'm still alive. I'm still kicking. Been busy with some things, but we're back with another episode of the Rush Podcast and got a lot to talk about again. I'm rusty, bro. I'm rusty.
I want to talk. Hey, we previewing the Pope. We're previewing the Pope.
Hey, you know, that's funny because we can't even, like, I mean, it's nice because I get the day off. But we can't.
See, I've been asking.
We can't even work tomorrow. Yeah, like, even right. If we wanted to open, they got the two streets that lead into my business. They got them closed. They blocked off. So we can't even really get in there, funny. Even if we wanted to work. But in other news, UTEP's won 4 games in a row, man. Basketball team doing pretty well, scoring a lot of points, exciting to watch.
Well, something that I didn't want to get into, but we might as well just get into it. The stretch before that, though, I mean, that's where we were going.
So right before we get on the air, you're talking about, I don't want to go into this bad place. I don't want to. And the first chance you get, you take it back to the losing streak. No, you know what, man? It's crazy to think where this team was just a few short months ago. You know, you start off 6-0. There's so much hype. You come off that huge comeback win against Colorado State.
You had no business really winning.
Yeah, you really didn't. In fact, you know, you could have said the same thing against Southern Illinois because you had a rough stretch there. But, you know, you're sitting at 6-0, and I don't think anybody could have projected that 2 months later, you know, you'd be 11-11. At what is it like 4-8 in conference or 5-7? It's crazy. Like, you know, this isn't a year where you've seen these ups and downs as far as injuries or, you know, ineligible people. You know, we've had great issues in the past. We've had the gambling issue a few years back. We've had injuries. We've had so on. But this year, you've pretty much had your team together throughout from start to finish. I mean, Matt Williams, we knew from the beginning that it could have been any day that he'd be out for the rest of the year, and it happened early. So you've had this team since pretty much day one, and they just been on this wild ride, man. It started so high. We thought that we just had with such high hopes for this team, and they just came crashing down so quickly. I mean, it's nice to see them come back with the 4 straight wins, but I mean, What do you make of all this, man?
There was just a stretch there where it was like, okay, has Floyd – I mean, you know, we've gone on this show before and talked about our take on Floyd and how we feel that, you know, it's probably time to definitely move on. But, you know, there was just that stretch of that when they losing those 6 out of 7 games where it's like, has he really lost them? You know, you're talking about going into Middle Tennessee and UAB where they actually played well, but at the time you're running into a buzzsaw because they both were playing pretty well at the time. So, okay, you know, you can accept that. But the real nightmare is when you go in and you blow a 17, 16-point lead in the second half to UTSA. That's where really the questions, you know, it's really not more of a question, but like a stamp, like, okay, you know, has he really officially lost this team? And then you come back home, you handle Florida Atlantic, which you're supposed to. You don't really play well, but you hold them to under 60 points. You get a couple guys going, but you can still feel that it's just not all there. And then – FIU just comes in and destroys you. I mean, there's no other way to put that. That was a 10-point game, but FIU just destroyed the Miners. And then that led into the disaster in Southern Miss. La Tech, you played well. You know, right, that La Tech game showed some hope. And then the magical weekend of the 66 tournament comes along, and Floyd kind of admits that, okay, look, we're just going to let these guys go. We're going to let our horses go. Something – we sat here and talked about in October thinking, look, this is the way you might want to go with this team, yeah, because we saw it happen against Colorado State. You know, they've gone away from having a guy like Hooper Vint in there that needs his touches instead of, look, let's spread the floor, let's use our speed and athleticism. And that's really been, you know, it's like a come to Jesus moment. You know, yeah, we're seeing Sean Coogler have that, as we'll get into with the coaching staff, and now Tim Floyd's having it. Now, is it too late? You know, I personally don't think it is, because let's just be honest. You're not winning, you know, with this schedule, regardless, it's going to be hard to get an automatic bid. We're seeing that, how weak the league is. So it's all about Birmingham. Yeah. But it is good to see, like you said, you go into that dark place where you're just sitting here thinking, damn, Floyd's going to retire at the end of this year. And then they get on this little roll.
That's the beauty of college basketball. Yeah. Because you can have teams – And you've seen it over and over in the NCAA tournament, where not just UAB last year. I mean, UAB was middle of the pack. You've seen teams in smaller leagues that go 14-18, and all of a sudden they're in the NCAA tournament. That's the beauty of it. You can go on a run late. You can get hot late, and everything that happened in November, December, and January just doesn't even matter anymore. But the problem that I see with this team is they're only, and I told you this multiple times this year, they're only as good as their jump shot. And at times, when everything's in rhythm and it's flowing, man, they're great. They can shoot it. They can score points. But when you can't get to the rim, when you can't rebound the basketball and you can't defend, at some point your balloon's going to be burst, man. At some point. And I just don't know that I could trust these guys. Not even trust. I don't know if trust is the right word, but just count on them to go 4 or 5 days in a Conference USA tournament. I think, is it 5 days now, or is it 4 days?
Actually, it's 5 days. There is a quote unquote, it's like a playoff
game.
Even though it's a part of the bracket, but you're basically playing into
so
play
even,
the first
even
round.
At 4 days, I mean, can this team really go 4 days back to back to back to back, shooting like they have been these last couple weeks, scoring like they have been? If you have to score 90 or 100 points to win a basketball game, man, I mean, you got some trouble. I mean, it's just no question. There's no two ways about it. You bring up the whole thing of Floyd with we thought he was going to retire, and is it time? And you know what, dude? Honestly, it is. It is time. Yeah. It's time that we all accept it. I've said it many a times for years now, literally at least 2 years, if not more. And I've never really come on this show to say it. I've been pissed off at Floyd. I've been pissed off at the basketball teams in years past, disappointed. I've never really come out and said it publicly, but I've told you many a times. I've told friends and family many a times. We won't win with Tim Floyd at the helm. I'm sorry to say it. It's time that we come to that realization, and we just start to move on. I don't know if it's just that Coach Floyd is at a point in his career where he doesn't have anything to prove anymore. I don't know if he's just not able to get the guys that he wants to take this program where he needs to go. Maybe his whole, thought process of what needs to be done and how it needs to be done is just not right for this program. Maybe it worked at Iowa State. Maybe it worked at USC. It's not necessarily meaning that it's working here. At this point, I like what I'm seeing from this team. They're exciting to watch. But is this the kind of basketball that's going to take us there, to the next level to get us to that NCAA tournament point? I don't know. I think it's time that Tim Floyd step aside. And I think we need to get some young blood in there, man. I think we need to go back. Everybody talks about, who are we going to get? If Tim Floyd goes, who are we going to get? Everybody, we shouldn't be worried about a name. And I think I mentioned this to you, too, a couple weeks ago. UTEP has never been a school that has gotten names. We're not a school that's going to attract big names. Bob Saul, when he came here and did well, was not a name for himself. You look at Don Haskins. Don Haskins wasn't a name. Don Haskins was a high school girls basketball coach. Yep. And he came in here and he made a name for himself. You look at the past success that we've had in basketball in the past two decades, with Gillespie. Who was Billy Gillespie when he came in?
You think about
here?
The only name maybe was Barbie. Just because he was an assistant
I don't even know if you consider that a name, but yeah, you're
but
right.
But that's probably the highest – quote unquote profile.
And I think we need to get back to that. You need to get back to this thing. And that's why as much as I can't stand the way Sean Coogler runs the offense, I don't like the style of football that they play, but I can live with it because he wants to win. He coaches with that fire, like he's got something to prove. And that's what you need. No matter if it's a name or not, that's what you need.
Yeah, and I mean, you see, Floyd's always been an animated character, I guess you could say, on the sideline. You can't question his passion, but you get into some of these post games and it's kind of almost at the beginning or during their losing streak before conference, it's kind of like, oh, shucks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Compared to, where a past couple of years when they would lose a game, I'd go back to the FAU game or the New Orleans game, when you had those seniors, you had Bo and Julian, that was that demeanor. You know what I mean? But there is, I don't want to come out here and say I'm on the Floyd bandwagon, but I think there is a slight type of I guess, kudos, if you want to say. As I said, I don't think it's a full kudos, but for him realizing that, look, you have four really, really good guards. Space the floor and let them go. And you're seeing that not only are the shots falling, but during this win streak, I was crunching some numbers. I'm going to have a breakdown, offensive breakdown of this little – you know, four game slide. I'm going to have that up on the website tomorrow, but they're averaging 42.5 points in the paint in these four games. You're just seeing ball movement. You're seeing better IQ, like they're coached. You know, I think we even said, come on, I came on the podcast a couple, maybe two or three times. I remember saying this where, you know, to me, you always hear that cliche, oh, they're well coached. I've never really heard a coach other than Kermit Davis say that about Tim Floyd. And why just Kermit Davis? Well, we all know they were, you know, sisters together. You know, you can call Kermit Davis a Floyd disciple if you want to, you know. But I'm seeing that this team is getting coached up. And not only are they getting coached up, but they're playing more freely and they're having fun. You know, we've always noticed that, you know, somebody makes a mistake, what are they doing? Looking at the bench. You know, now they're making mistakes. You see a Lee Moore smile at somebody and pat them on the butt and they're huddling together. I've never seen a Tim Floyd team huddle at the free throw line. Rarely. Just little things like that that I think that are kind of evolving this particular group because maybe they're younger, because they're a different type of generation than what we've had in the past. And you're maybe seeing Floyd evolve, but, I mean, you just don't know.
That's my question. Do you think it's just because he's realizing at this point in the season that he has no other choice but to open things up and just let them go out there and play? Or do you think he's actually evolving as a coach? Do you think he's actually considering changing his style of coaching?
No.
I mean, next year, are we going to come into next year with Floyd? Honestly, Tim Floyd, even though I just said what I said about I think it's time to go, he's not going to get fired.
No.
He's not going to get fired this year. And you know what? I mean, it is what it is. But do you think he's going to come in next year and all of a sudden open it up and go, hey, guys, let's get out there and let's just play, go have fun? Nah, he's going to get back to what he knows, what he wants to do.
You have Matt Williams coming back. You have Kelvin Jones is supposed to, you know, I'm not a big fan of Kelvin yet, but you have those big guys, which is his excuse to go back. And I still don't think they're going to be a good defensive team. I mean, regardless.
See, defense isn't something that you can coach.
Right.
You have to want to play defense. And that's what we're missing. And, you know, it's kind of disappointing because – and, you know what, I'll be honest. I haven't seen as much UTEP basketball this year as I have in years past. I've been so busy with other things in my life that I haven't been able to watch every single minute of every single game like I have in years past. But either way, you know, what I have seen, I just don't see that desire to want to play defense. And especially and I'm not trying to single him out as a guy that doesn't want to do it, but I just expected more of him. Urban Morris.
Yeah.
Last year, he was a guy that we put up there with a guy like Julian Washburn. You know, when you had Julian Washburn as a shutdown defender and you had Urban Morris as a guy that was maybe not quite what Julian Washburn was, but he was up there as a defender.
Yeah.
You don't see that this year. And that's just more of an identity that the team has. They're just not a defensive team. They want to get out there and they just want to play street ball. And that's why you see them go out and score 112 points. But it's also why you see them lose to a team like UTSA. Because, look, when the shots don't fall, there's nothing that you can do about it. If a team is playing better team basketball than you and you're not hitting your shots, you're not going to win the game. It doesn't matter if that other team is 4-22.
And think about the past. A guy like CJ Cooper wasn't hitting, or a guy like Washburn. What do? You throw it inside the Ventana. You throw it in the setting lane because high percentage of the time they're going to make the layup. Higher percentage of the time they're going to get fouled and get to the free throw line.
I know.
Now you don't have that this year. So, you know, when Morris is pulling up from 17 and it's clank, and then Artis does his little dipsy dude dungaroo 17-footer clank, and then Harris gets a wide-open three and clanks for a stretch, what do you do?
And those stretches are so crucial in basketball games. Like, people don't realize, you know, you look at a box score and you just see, oh, this guy missed a couple shots, and you don't think anything of it. But when it's shots like that, when it's not in the flow of the game, you know, the flow of the offense, and
you're
missing
trying to put
shots,
somebody away,
and you're not getting, you know, back on defense, and all of a sudden you miss two or three quick shots in a row, and that team's getting out on a fast break and getting a layup. You know, you turn a 5-point lead into a 5-point deficit in no time, or you turn a 5-point deficit into a 15-point deficit in no time, like we've seen time and time again with this team where they've been down double digits. You know, so it's a completely different style that we haven't been used to under Floyd. And you know what, I do give him not a pass. Because I think no matter what, in my opinion, if you're a good coach, and I'm not saying Coach Floyd is not, I think he's good in certain areas, but a good coach is going to get the best out of what he's got.
All year long.
Always.
All year
Always.
Long, not just at a certain
and,
point.
And that's why, you know, you look at a guy like Calipari, who might be the best college basketball coach, I don't know if I'll say ever, but
in recent
memory. I mean, of course, Coach K, there's a lot of great coaches out there, but with Calipari, everybody talks about, oh, well, he gets these best talents. These are still 17, 18-year-old kids that went up against juniors and seniors at other universities. So it's not so much about the talent always. It's about getting the most out of those players. And that's something that a guy like Cal always does. He gets the best and the most out of his players. And you don't see that a lot from Floyd coach players. You know, we waited for Julian Washburn. Maybe he just wasn't that type of player, but we waited for Julian Washburn to bloom for 4 years. And you saw flashes of it here and there where he'd go off for 18 or 20 points and be like, there it is, you know, but it just never came out.
Yeah, four for 12 nights.
Yeah, C.J. Cooper was the same thing. And, you know, John Bohannon never really flourished into that player that we expected him to be, you know, on a consistent 20 and 12 or whatever it is. You know, I don't know what it is, man, but we haven't seen that type of progression from these players out of Floyd. He's just not getting the most out of what he's got. We expected, even though Dominic Artis has done well, we expected a lot out of this kid. Now, maybe we expected too much. I don't know. But, you know, do you feel like Coach Floyd has gotten the most out of Dominic Artis this year?
Not in this last stretch, yes. But like you said, it's about consistency. It's not about, you know, okay, yeah, you want, like we mentioned earlier, you want to be playing this well late in the year. But, I mean, Dominic Artis is, for one, is a gym rat. I mean, this guy eats, sleeps, lives basketball. You know, so it shouldn't really be hard to get through him. And I know when you say that about Cal, I have the same opinion because you probably watched some of his interviews where he talks about that, you know, openly, you know, where he says how, you know, yeah, we may get the, you know, one of the best recruiting classes in the history of recruiting, but it's a pain in the ass to get these guys. I mean, it's true. And Floyd says the same thing as well. But, you know, Cal just has that charisma or whatever it is to get it out of him. And I really think when you talk about the development, you know, we have another group of guys to kind of watch and see, you know, now, do we want to give Floyd time? You already know that answer. The fact is Floyd is going to get that time to develop these guys from this. So that's the second wave because, you know, that first clouded wave of you know, after Barbie's boys left, you know, it was clouded because the guys that were going to come didn't come, you know, in a sense. So you're dealing with, you know, a set of three guys that were pillars over the last 4 years, which everybody knows about. And now you're having more pillars of those guys that Morris won't be back, but you have a Lee Moore that's back for next year, possibly another year. Artis should be coming back. So will be the ultimate judgment of how much is he getting out of these guys, because it's not a one and done like Calipari where it's something new every year. He's going to have the same group that has played well in this stretch of the season and a 6-0 start. But we can really gauge, okay, is Floyd really developing these guys? Is he doing it? Because like you mentioned, this is probably something different the way that he's building this program compared to what he did at USC where he's grabbing DeRozan's and maybe even going back to Idaho or New Orleans. So, you know, it's like you want to have patience with Floyd, but this is UTEP basketball, man. You know what I'm saying? Like this is.
And I understand, you know, Floyd has had some bad things happen to him along the way. Yeah. You know, you go back to that one guy that never ended up coming here. I can't remember his name anymore.
Thomas?
No. That one guy that committed on ESPN. Remember he had that big thing? What was his name?
Penis breath?
Bleep! You know, you go back to the situation. You go back to the gambling situation. You know, you have Vince Hunter who's – you see what he's doing right now in the D League. If that guy was playing for UTEP right now, I mean, come on.
Nate Smith? Jesus, can you say Nate Smith?
Jesus, like 37 and 24, whatever it was a few weeks back in the D League. And, I mean, a lot of things have not gone Floyd's way. But at the same time, I feel like he has asked for those things.
He's raised the athletes, the recruit, and we've talked about this
before. Yeah, definitely. But, you know, I look back at one key situation that took place the moment he arrived. And I wasn't in the locker room, so I can't say, you know, I know exactly how things went down. But Arnett Moultrie.
And then right after that, Myron Strong.
I'm not worried about Myron, but, you know, you have Arnett Moultrie, who's arguably your best returning player, potential NBA draft pick, and you're coming in as a new coach, and you try to set down the law and be like, you're either going to come here and play your 4 years or I don't want you here. Because that's according to what I've heard, that's how it went down. I don't know the exact conversation, but that's basically what happened. And Arnett said, well, I want to test the waters. And he's like, if you test the waters, you're not on the team. Well, this guy's like, peace, I'm out. I can go play at any school I want to, you know? I mean, maybe not any, but the dude went and played at Mississippi State.
He landed,
that kind of set the tone for a lot of the way things have gone for Tim Floyd, you know? we've seen a number of defections since he's been here. Since year one, he came in, and I just remember that first recruiting class. Maybe it was the second year because he came in late the first year, but his first full recruiting class with Darius Nelson and
Chauncey
Harris, I think, was in that. You had a lot of guys, and a lot of different things happened to those players, but almost none of them.
Perez wasn't Mike Perez.
That's another one. You know,
the man Moore too. When I ended up at Wisconsin, it was in Green Bay or something like that, and he was in the tournament too.
I mean, there was a bunch of them, and none of them panned out here. I think the only one that was a part of that group was C.J. Cooper, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, it's just been that way under Floyd since he got here. I don't know what it is. I'm not trying to make excuses or I don't know what, but it's just like that tone was set the day he got here, and it just seems like it's continued on. And so maybe he's had bad breaks, but I also think he hasn't helped himself in a lot of ways. And that's why we get this middle-of-the-road, mediocre basketball, mediocre finishes in the end, because – That's just what you get when you do things the way you've done them.
And that's my take about, you know, when we talk about, you know, Floyd has run his time. It's not about because, oh, this team sucks this year or no, there's been a pattern. You can even go back to me, which is embarrassing. The most embarrassing thing was the fight at the Battle for Atlantis. I mean, y'all some grown ass men fighting over a damn, you know, a recruit. Like, come on, yo, like, you know, you should definitely be better now with Floyd. You know, who knows what happened, but there's really just seems like there's been nothing but black eyes.
Yeah.
To what when I grew up was a golden standard of athletics in this region.
No doubt about it.
You know, and that's really my take about, you know, it's not just because of the struggles this year. It's just because, like you said, from day one, you've just seen and heard and smelled all this smoke that came out of there that before, even under a guy like Barbie, who really ran a quote unquote, I'm going to say this loosely, a renegade program, but, you know, it was a little bit more looser, and you didn't have these type of problems that were out in the air. Maybe there was, but it just wasn't out in the air. But, you know, definitely it's going to be something to watch, you know, how this team progresses to finish out the year, to see, you know, where is UTEP going to go? Is Floyd still that guy? And we'll definitely figure that out. But kind of a big weekend this weekend. You know, you're a game out of fourth place, but to me it seems really far-fetched at 7-6. You know, a lot of basically it's out of your control other than you just winning. You're winning this weekend. And
you got to run the table more than anything.
Yeah, basically you got to run the table, and you have an opportunity to not overlooking Southern Miss. That should be a win. But that La Tech game all of a sudden becomes a game that's really going to decide.
Just to clarify, we're a game and a half out of first. I'm sorry, out of fourth. So.
But yeah, I mean,
We got to make up. Well, that I guess that Louisiana Tech game, though, would cover that other half game. Yeah. So.
And I mean, this is going to be a real interesting stretch, because the next four games, I mean, really the next three, you're playing three teams that are going to be vying for that fourth place spot with Charlotte, Old Dominion, La Tech. Three of these next four are going to really be important heading, because, you know, you of course you want to have that top four seed. That's important. But also, too, you the way that this UTEP team is, you want to play for matchups. You don't want to play a Marshall in the first round. You know what I mean? You would rather play an FAU or you know, Western Kentucky again. Even though Western Kentucky was a little bit bigger, they jumped out to a 19-point lead. I like the way that we match up with them. I like the way we match up with North Texas. You know, so there's just certain matchups that you want to see. I mean, there's no doubt about it. First of all, Southern Miss, they should roll them. You know, I mean, they were up big on the road. Southern Miss is shorthanded as hell. I mean, I could probably make their 9th, 10th man rotation. I could set screens and block out. Doc, what's up? I got 3 years of eligibility, baby. But that Louisiana Tech game, that is really going to tell me how far this team's going to go and whether I'm going to get excited for a conference tournament or I'm just going to kind of keep my expectations like I've had, where it's just a minute by minute, possession by possession thing. But that Louisiana Tech game will really show how far this team has gone in this late.
I want to see, you know, I agree to an extent, but Louisiana Tech is a little bit of an outlier when it comes to gauging where the minors are, because they're going to want to get up and down the court with the minors.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's going to play into the style of play that the minors want to play. I want to see how they're going to fare when they're thrown into the fire in a situation that they're not used to, that they're not able to get up and down the court in that game after at Old Dominion. Yeah. Well, Dominion is going to be a much better defensive team.
They're
going
to want to play into the 60s.
Exactly. That's going to want to play into the 60s, and you're on the road. You know, so that's a game. If they go in there, you know, it doesn't matter if they win, if they go in there and put up a good fight, and it's a game down to the wire, you know, now I'll say, okay, maybe this team really does have something that they can take into Birmingham, take on give yourself a chance to win some games on a neutral floor, you know. But if you could, you know, it's one thing to do it at home, and it's one thing to do it against a team that wants to do exactly what you want to do, because then it's easy. You just get the ball, run up the court and shoot, get up the, you know what I mean? It's just back and forth all day long. So you know, if that's your style, then it doesn't matter who you're doing that against. You're going to probably score a lot of points and have a decent game. But when you're in a situation that you're not really comfortable in, you know, a team's trying to slow the game down on you, playing some better defense on you, that's where we're going to get a better, in my opinion, we're going to get a better sense of how far this team has come along. But I will point out one thing. You know, you look back, and the Miners had that rough stretch. You know, you go to MSU in December. And you lose, you come back, you lose to UTA, you go to Washington State, you lose. They had that stretch there. And then they came back, and then they scored some points against Samuelson State, against Rio Grande Valley, whatever the hell. You know, you go on another four-game win streak there. They had that four-game win streak there. And that was another time where we are right now. Maybe they weren't playing as well as they are right now, but that was another time in the season where you're like, okay, they got that out of their system. They're coming, you know.
Lose who you're supposed to lose.
Yeah, and now they're getting back together. It's time for conference play. And then after that four-game win streak, they just fell apart again, and they lost 6 of 7. So I want to feel like they're playing well, but I just don't know if it's actually playing better. You know what I mean? Like if the team is actually doing
playing
better,
winning basketball,
or if it's just a stretch that they're hitting shots and yeah. They're, and, you know, because I'm telling you, man, this team is only going to go as far as that jump shot will take them. Once it stops to fall, we have nothing else to go to. So I don't know if we're actually getting better or if the shots are just falling right now. But you're right. You know, these next couple games are really going to be telling. We better come with a win against Southern Miss. And, you know, then you got La Tech, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, I totally, totally agree. It's going to be a really, really interesting next 2 weekends with 4 really big ones. Like I mentioned, you know, you got 3 of the 4 teams that you're basically chasing or, you know, at bay with in the standing. So just kind of moving along here, I want to take it to the comment thread. Had Bishop Miner ask a pretty good question because definitely been noticing this too. He asked, what is the direction of this team, the recruiting direction for 2016? UTEP holds 14 scholarships for next season. They're still offering point guards and power forwards and point guards. What do you guys think about that? Who was leaving? Are we looking to go small or stick with the tradition in Floyd's style? You know, personally, I think they're really looking to grab. I mean, Floyd said it kind of publicly. We're looking for that 6'9", 6'8", guy. And it's real interesting because they just offered a point guard last week. You look at the two guards that are already committed. So it's going to be real interesting to see, are they able to pull, a transfer? Are they going to be able to pull, you know, a high school kid? That's really going to be something that's going to keep our eye on. But definitely they need – You need a rebounder. You know, yeah. You don't really need a guy that's going to come up there and shoot 50% inside the paint or be an automatic guy. I mean, it's nice to have, but at the end of the day, you really need a rebounder. Even and at that point, you might want to go that JUCO. You might want to go that transfer route because you're not going to get a high school kid that's named, you know, Vince Hunter was the exception. You find a Vince Hunter, whatever, 15 years. So that's really going to be interesting to watch. And to your question, just like we were talking about this, about, you know, are we going to go small in the future because it's working? I don't think so. I think Floyd wants to stick. I think Floyd wants those big guys. He wants those centers. And who is leaving? That's the big question because that is the reason why I think that the – I mean, it's like that they learned their lesson from the past of being guardless and going big where now they're loading up on guards. And there could be somebody that could leave. I mean, the first person that jumps to mind, and there's no basis aside, but just dominant artists because – you know, some people may say he has a pro stock. I don't believe it personally right now. But somebody can put it in his ear, you know, and that may be where that is coming
Where he's come from in his career, I think he's probably a little more mature.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
You know, a little
definitely.
Smarter. If this would have been his third year at Oregon and there were people in his ear, I think, yeah, maybe he could have been jumping ship.
But not.
But I think after kind of seeing how fragile things are and how quickly things can go wrong for you, I think he would realize that he's not where he needs to be to actually make it to the pros right now. But I would hope that it's not Dominic. If somebody leaves this program, I would hope it's not Dominic. I just don't think it makes sense for him if it's not pro. I don't think it makes sense for him to take off to go, you know, to transfer somewhere. I mean, at this point, That is, to me,
another person that came to mind, but, you know, I think that this would kind of be far-fetched, but maybe McSwiggin, you know. But, again, with just because of, you know, the whole NCAA, at the same time, he's going to have it made because next year he's Urban Morris. You know what I mean? McSwiggin is going to fill that role with Urban Morris. So it's not like he's going to come in and, I mean, of course, he's going to have to fight for minutes, you know, but you know, he's going to be that guy.
What about
he's
a guy like Touchette?
Touchette, I could kind of see it, but I mean,
you know, going back home, playing closer to home,
yeah,
smaller school.
Yeah, I would see that because, you know, let's just be honest. I mean, he's a great player in high school, but he just, the Division I domination, you just don't see that. And that, I think maybe we kind of expected that out of him because he was the Gatorade 4A player of the year. I think, you know, not saying that he's a Division II player, but for him to dominate and to have that 40% shooting percentage, you know, with over 153s a season, I think you get that at a Division II. But, you know, he has played well as of late, and he's been a nice spell guy for Dominic Artis where he's improved, where there's really not that much drop-off because there would be a huge drop-off early in the year. We noticed that. You know, early in the year, his best game was probably Colorado State. You know, other than that, he really struggled in the stretches. But that's going to be definitely something to watch. He could be – I know, you know, it's just, to me, he just seems like a guy that's kind of paid his dues already with the redshirt year, so stick it out a little bit. You know what I mean? But he does have those grades where, you know, he could maybe get himself where he's immediately eligible somewhere. You never know. But that is another name to watch. I don't see anybody yet concrete. Like, oh, yeah, he's got, you know, the past it was the Josh Browns. And, you know those scholarship guys weren't going to be happy with their playing time. But, you know, this year you're seeing guys kind of get maybe more playing time than we expected. You know, a guy like Lee Moore, we expected to play a lot. You know, obviously Omega. But it's just, you know, who's that odd man out right now? It's really hard to tell. I don't think so, but, I mean, we see how the world of college basketball is a transfer. So, good question, Bishop Minor. Last note on basketball, kind of a fun thing that I've seen on a message board I really want to talk because it really was interesting to me. I mean, I put up a Twitter poll yesterday, and the Twitter poll really, really surprised the hell out of me. You know, so basically I seen it on Minor Digs where somebody was asking, should they retire the 1966 Texas Western uniforms? That was a question on it. Should they retire them? My question on Twitter was, should they retire them after the season? 36% say yes.
That's, no matter how you do it, though, that's split, man.
Yeah,
pretty much
it's close. But I expected more no with only 25%, special occasions only 35%. So it's really split, but I personally thought that we would have over 40%, 50% no. Because like I told you, I'm kind of on the fence of it where I think that we should kind of move on because, you know, it's a great part of our history. I'm not saying forget it, but maybe move on and kind of let these guys just chill. You know what I mean? Like seeing them over the weekend, like these dudes are old, man. Like they, you know, I don't know how many more tribute things they could come up to, you know what I mean? Like or like show up to.
Well, I completely agree.
But basically what I'm saying is, you know what, like it is part of history. Let's just bring it out, you know, once a year, twice a year, maybe, you know what I mean? But I think that out of the respect for what they did, you know, it's the same thing like retiring a jersey.
You know, I would have probably agreed with that if we would have gotten the Kentucky rematch.
That's true.
You know, like if we would actually, that would have kind of put closure on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
beat them.
And but you know what I mean? Like that would have given us some closure in a sense. And then you can go and retire the jerseys. But you know, I don't know that retiring the jerseys shows like as much respect. I don't know. I think it's a good thing. Like I think it gets people hyped up. You know, UTEP. Texas Western, whatever, is still the only university in Texas to win a college basketball championship. And you know, that's something to be proud of. And I think as long as we can hold on to that, then we should. Now, as far as bringing these guys out, yeah, like, honestly, it's getting ridiculous. You know, they made this whole thing about it, and it was great. You know, it was awesome.
You should have.
But they do that to them, like – seems like it's almost every home game. It seems like they're presenting them like it's all the time. And it's like, you know, that, you know, let them, you know, retire. Like, you know, no need to bring them back. But you know what? The jerseys, I think it's good for the program. I think it's good for the city. I think it gets people fired up when they see those jerseys. I know I like seeing them.
I like them too.
I like seeing them.
That's why I'm so torn in between.
And it's a good marketing ploy. You know, if they get out there, they get to give these jerseys away and stuff. You know, when I know the Minor Maniacs were wearing that style for a while. And, you know, it's just it's a good thing. It's a good thing for the school and for the city, I think. It's a nice, you know, marketing ploy. And again, I think it gets people fired up. I don't think it's time to retire them. I think if you had, you know, that closure, like I was saying with Kentucky, maybe you can kind of make that. But I just, you know, I think you hold on to it as long as you can, man. As long as you can.
Yeah, I just thought it was so interesting because, you know, when I can't make a decision on whether I like something or not, it kills me. I'm thinking, damn, what, like, you know, because I see both sides of it. Yeah, I love them. When they first busted those out, I was like, I want me one of those. I won't even wear it. I just want to frame it somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, but at the same time, like I said, I just think, like, you know, that I'm going to be that guy. Yeah, it is 50 years ago. We need to build a new legacy. But, you know, but it is part of this history. It's part of what makes UTEP, UTEP. Even if they won it in the Texas West, I mean, that's how UTEP is known. Glory Road, Don Haskins, Bobby Joe Hill. You know, those are the first three things you hear about when you talk to somebody that doesn't really know UTEP, but they know, you know, the situation or the history. So real interesting, really, really interesting topic that I thought. And I wanted to get everybody else's opinion. And I guess everybody's like me. They're split. You know what I mean? The majority of the 100 and whatever people voted are split. So real interesting topic. But I think the UTEP athletic team that had the most, I don't want to call this drama, but most happenings was the UTEP football team, you know, probably was since December.
Yeah.
And finally today, everything kind of got settled in. So
we think,
I mean, they say it.
Let's look back to your run under Coogler. Remember, we lost our D coordinator in the summer. Or spring. So we're not out of the woods just yet. But, yeah, it seems like everything's been wrapped up. You know, you got some good hires. You got some good hires. Guys that are obviously – look, when I first saw, like, for instance, when I first saw Peace as the guy that was coming in to be the OC, I was excited about it. You know, guy's got a hell of a resume. He's been around the block. He's been at some big programs. He's coached under some great coaches. I was kind of discouraged, though, when I started seeing, I don't know if you noticed this, I'm sure you did, some of the people from the schools where he was at previously kind of bashing him.
They were like,
oh, these guys are getting happy over.
Sorry,
yeah, and I'm like, you know. But at the same time, he fits Coogler's mold.
Yeah.
Like, he fits what Coogler wants to do with this offense. And that's a good thing. Like, if you have somebody that can do that, then I think it's better for us. You know, Patrick Higgins wasn't that guy.
No.
As much as the thing about it is, like, you can be a good offensive mind and still run the ball 40 times a game. You know what I mean? Like, it just seemed like there was no creativity in running the football with Patrick Higgins. And I think that's something that will change with Peace.
Easily.
I think they'll be able to use more of their weapons and just kind of keep defenses off balance that we didn't see under Higgins. It was just too predictable. And that's the thing. Like, if you are going to run the ball, you can't be predictable. Like, as much as being one-minded or however you want to put it is predictable, you can't be predictable. You have to switch things up, shake up formations, run different plays out of different formations, different options, whatever it might be. So that way you just keep the defense off balance. Like you were talking about, you know, it seemed like every time you saw a certain formation, you knew exactly where the play was going, you know. You can't have that. And I think a guy like Peace will bring that. You know, he knows how to coach big-time football. He knows how to coach in this type of offense. And he just – I think he's a good fit for Sean Coogler.
Yeah, and we'll run down these codes. But what I want to say about Peace is the way – there was a really good article. I don't know if I have it bookmarked here. Let me see if I can find it. But there's a really good article that basically explained – I have it saved on my work browser – that pretty much explained what the offense is going to look like. And there's three – components to the Brett Peace offense that I really love because, one, we have the linemen to do it. Two, you have the skill guys to do it that are returning. Number one is leverage. That's the big key in his offense is leverage. You're going to see, you know, you're going to see so much motion. You're going to see them line up in one formation, and all of a sudden you're going to see them branch out into another formation to get that leverage. It's not really like a check with me type of deal, but it's like, look, this is what the defense is doing. This is what we're going to show them. And then you make a check and somebody's going to go this. So leverage is going to be a big one. The second one that came up was grass. Grass meaning we're going to be loaded up where you're not going up. Kind of the same thing with the leverage deal, which is something that was desperately lacking under Patrick Higgins. We're talking about running to a short side or running into to a stacked box. You're really not going to see that no more with Brent Peace. You're going to see him use the, you're going to see him use his athletes in space where there's grass, where there's room to run. Talking about rolling out to a guy into a short part of this. How many times do we see that where a guy like Mac Lefwich or even particularly Jameel Showers, they did that to a lot, was annoying. Jameel was kind of that guy that needed that speed. And the third aspect is using your personnel. And that's really a big thing that you see at Boise State, what they did under Brent Peace with a guy like Doug Martin and all those type of weapons where you really couldn't pick your poison with one because they can run the ball well, but they'll hit you with that play action. They'll hit you with that tight end across the middle when you're not expecting it. And I think those aspects are beautiful. And the number one thing that really got me fired up for Brent Peace when they introduced him, I talked about the linemen. And I talked about that leverage stuff. And his eyes lit up because they have now you can go a legitimate 10 to 11 too deep offensive line and use these unbalanced lines that we're going to see. And you have athletic linemen that you can put in motion and that can block going downhill. Don't have to just block straight up from a three-point stance. And I think that right there, not the fact that Aaron Jones is coming back or Warren Reddick's had a great year or Batson or you know, we're trying to figure out the quarterback, but because UTEP now has these linemen where these unbalanced lines of Brent Peace is going to come in using this leverage grass deal, it's going to work. It's going to work against smaller defensive lines, smaller, quicker defensive lines at Conference USA, the smaller, quicker linebackers. It's really going to work when you're able to have that leverage with speed behind them. You know, a guy that can change direction like Aaron Jones. You know, so that's really, I think that's really got me fired up. When I talked to Brent Peace and he talked about using these linemen more than using, you know, a skill guy or, oh, we're going to throw more. It's no, look, we have the linemen to set up what we want to be, which should open up the rest of it. Yeah. And that's really what I think that was missing from a Patrick Higgins standpoint, because like you said, it was just the same formation. There was no type of creativity of, hey, look, they're overloading this side or, you know, I think it's just going to be a lot more. It's going to be way more unpredictable. And plus with that lineman that they have, I mean, this is almost the perfect hire for Sean Cougar because of what he's built recruiting wise. So I'm really, really excited. Now, the next thing is quarterback development, which, you know, we're going to have all spring and fall to talk about. So, you know, that's the next thing that's going to be who's going to be that guy in this offense. But, you know, moving
again,
on.
We're going to talk about that again.
Yeah, for the second straight here. And then moving on to what I thought was one of the – I mean, Peace was obviously, to me, the home run hitting hire. The triple hire, the guy that got the triple, Dyron Arch, you know, the wide receiver coach. That was a really good hire. Number one, recruiting. I mean, we're already seeing him hit that Dallas area or hit that Houston area and bring kids in here. You know, bringing that Dylan Parcee kid from San Angelo, you know, where he was coaching at Angelo State. I mean, that right there, that's a great hire. And I really thought that they were more of an air raid type of offense, but it's the same concepts. So not only are these guys going to learn, you know, they're going to be better receivers as far as pass, but they're going to learn how to block in this type of spread power run that we're going to see with a guy like Brent Peace. And then defensive coordinator, I mean, wow. Cougar just cannot catch a break with the defensive coordinator. I mean, the timeline from it went from Castile's the guy to, oh, wait, no, Castile backed out to, okay, now it's Ken Flagel, but Castile was never in play. And then, okay, it is Flagel. And then Flagel takes the Eagles job.
And then
both of them backed out. Castile did have an offer, and then all of a sudden it's Tom Mason, and it's okay. That seems more of the guy that's going to come. You know what I mean? But what are your thoughts on this? It does fit what UTEP does as far as,
you know,
what
honestly,
they have personnel wise. But
straight to it, until I see otherwise, I would have rather not seen a switch on defense.
I mean, neither.
I mean, we don't know a lot, but you know, we know a little bit about. Apparently some things that were going on, and there's bigger reasons to why there is no longer
laughable reason.
Yeah, but, you know, regardless of that, like, I just – the defense did make it in the second half of the year. And even though I didn't really necessarily like, you know, where they were at. I didn't like the – I'm not a big fan of the 4-2-5, but they had made strides. They had started to play better. They were competitive.
Stuff in the run.
And when I saw Castile, I thought, I mean, okay.
I didn't want a 3-3-5.
Yeah, yeah. And I was, but you know, I was like, oh,
recruiting
okay,
names.
Let's we could do this. And then, And then it was like, all right, Castile's out. When I saw Flagel, I was like, all right, this seems like a hard-nosed type dude, just no bullshit type guy. And I was ready for that. I mean, you talk about the Browns and their defense, man. I mean, that's what they play. And so I was down with that. I was, for lack of better words, I was down with that. And then when that went out the window, it was like, we're screwed.
Where do you go now?
Where do you go? And Tom Mason comes in. Look, Tom Mason's got a great resume as well. He's been around the block.
Great recruiter, too.
Great recruiter.
From what we've seen so far.
The only thing that I just don't like, man, is you look at the 2 years that he had as a interim head coach. Yeah. And you can name 100 reasons why the team didn't play well, but they finished, what, 2-10 both times or something like that?
They were bad.
That kills me right there, man. Like, granted, he's not our head coach. He's a DC. But still, you want to see a guy that's able to lead teams. And again, like we say in basketball, you know, get the most out of your players.
And those are his players because he was a main recruiter there in the Dallas area. You know, so
yeah.
And I agree.
But I don't know. I mean, you can't judge a guy before he actually takes a step onto the field and call some plays.
But that's the only guy that we're kind of all on the fringe with because you just – I mean, yes, you have the personnel to run it. You know, can they learn it? It doesn't seem like it is. I mean, according to Mason, it is a little bit more of a – it's complex. But, I mean, looking at – going to practices and watching Scott Stoker's defense, I mean, dude, that shit – I mean, it's not just shoot a gap. It's not just this is your assignment. I mean, there is a lot of variables. There's a lot of communication that would go on with that 4-2-5. I played in a 4-3 my whole life. You know, so it's pretty much simple. I mean, you're looking at your keys. You're looking at gaps. You're looking at assignments. You're looking at that tight end. If they run a tight end spread, you know, you're looking at formations and matchups. But it's just I just don't know. That's the thing. It's like, okay, we had good run stoppers last year. But now, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like you just – until I see, like, maybe four spring practices, two scrimmages – maybe then I'll be like, okay, like,
I can't make a call on that until next year,
man.
We've been fooled in spring before. We've been fooled in spring, summer, fall ball before. You know, you see some good things in the scrimmages and you're like, man, these guys look good. And then come game time, it's just a completely different thing. The game's played at a different speed and it's hard to judge. You know, you can't judge the guy before he's called any plays, man, but it's just, if you're a betting man, or woman, whatever you want to say, you know, that's kind of fitting at that little right at the same time. But, you know, if you're a betting man, you know, would you rather stick with Scott Stoker or would you take a chance on Tom Mason?
Nah, for sure Stoker.
That's what I'm saying, you know. So that's the tough part for me.
That's
the
coach that – you want to talk about getting some other players, Stoker.
And to me, you took a step back.
Yeah.
Now, maybe, you know, Mason has the better resume, but to me, you took a step back. And until Tom Mason proves otherwise, I have a hard time thinking that we're better off with him than we were with Scott Stoker.
Yeah.
Again, I didn't really like the 4-2-5. I thought it caused a lot of issues. I thought we didn't have the personnel in the secondary to play that type of defense. But he got a lot out of his players, and they started playing well. They started responding, and they played well down the stretch. They kept us in football games, and, you know, I don't know, man. We took a step back.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you take a step back from a coaching angle, but you still got some talent there. You still got your Aaron Jones, your Alvin Jones. You got
now
Ty
they
got to
learn a whole new system.
And that's that double edged sword when you come in. But it's gonna be real interesting for his defensive staff. He added Derek Bell today. Really well. I mean, the dude seems like he's gonna kill it in recruiting. That's the biggest thing I got from Darius Bell is that he really balances out this staff. Like I was telling Anthony in the beginning, you know, this is not like a diss on any of these guys, but you got a bunch of older guys in there. You know, you got guys that have been around. Dan Yanowski is another guy we'll touch on here real quickly. But Darius Bell is kind of that, you know, that shift, you know, that little shift and that kind of balance that you need. I think that you need on coaching staff. You need to have different type of personalities. You have different walks of background. You know, you can't really just get the same vision of a guy. You want that vision, but that same style. You want to have it differently. And I think he's really going to relate to these younger cornerbacks because you're going to have these corners, your Nick Needhams, your Kalon Beverleys for the next couple of years. So I think he's going to fit in that. And I also think he's going to help recruiting. He's from the Dallas area. He was a 3-star recruit himself coming out of Dallas, one of the highly touted defensive backs in his class. So I think it's going to pay dividends for recruiting. And another guy that I really like recruiting is Yanowski. You know, Yanowski's taking over for Gabe Franklin, obviously. you guys know, we read right up on the Rush that, you know, Franklin took the job over at Boise. So Yanowski is a guy that's been a recruiting coordinator, Cougar said today, at LSU. A couple other Power Fives can't come to my head right now. But, you know, he seems like a guy that could really get the job done and raise the recruiting level. And that's kind of like a segue into what we're going to get into recruiting, because the biggest thing I noticed once these guys were in place, or, you know, they weren't announced. You know, we knew that Yanowski was in place. We knew Peace was in place. We knew Ice was in place. You saw the recruiting definitely raise. The level of athlete they're going after. You know, we went on a double man piece last year talking about, talking about how UTEP will never be a top 50 recruiting class and how recruiting rankings are out the window. But this group, within a month and a half, you know, yeah, about a month and a half, maybe, took 9 recruits, 10 commits to 24 signees, and from we've been at the bottom to a top 100 in Rivals. You know, and really, I went on Kapowitz and them show and talked about how it really is these coaches that have these connects. You know, you look at the perfect example to me was you bring in Tom Mason. And Tom Mason, when I interviewed Tom Mason at the beginning, talked about he had those Dallas-Fort Worth connections. And his first commit, Sione Tiapu from Allen High School. I mean, that right there, now Sione is not a three-star, four-star top guy, but this was a productive player on one of the best high school football teams in the nation. That right there, that's a prime example. You know, you look at what Thyron Eich brought in and Dylan Parsi, a guy that was committed to Stephen F. Austin, perfect outside linebacker fit, great length, great arms. Went on his visit, boom, they got him. I really think that this coaching staff is going to raise the level of recruiting. You know, development, that's the next thing that I really want to watch with these guys, because a guy like Yanowski has kind of been out of the NFL, or he's been out of college football for a while. Thyron Eich hasn't been at a Division I program yet. And Brent Peace, we talked about his last two stints, didn't go that well. So, you know, as far as the off-the-field stuff, and it's funny because when we reported about Brent Peace, like 4 or 5 recruits were like, oh, shit, Brent Peace is at UTEP on Twitter. And it's like, dude, like, he's a name.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys there may not be big names to most, but to high school coaches that have dealt with these guys before, they're good people. You know, they have that history. And I think that's really, really what you're going to see with this UTEP football program, just because of these coaches that they bring in. And, you know, standing ovation to Sean Cougar. Really, like we said, Sean Cougar is committed to win, and he wasn't going to sit pat one more year, because you can't. He had every right to, because it was year 3, because of the injuries, because he's kept that staff around where, okay, let's just one more year, you know, because it's familiarity. But Cougar wasn't having it. He identified those problems, got rid of whatever was happening, whether it was on field, whether it was off field, whether it was between, you know, personal stuff, whatever it may have been, you know, he took care of this yeah. program and put it to the forefront, I believe, as far as, you know, the potential that we have with these recruiting classes that he's brought in, because now you have depth. Now you're having depth, and you're added 23 guys that can really add future depth. And so I'm just really, really pleased with the direction that Sean Cougar has gone in. And, you know, mixed with these recruiting classes and what's returning, you know, these next 2 years should be competitive. I'm not going to sit here and tell y'all we're going to be competing for conference titles, but we're going to be competitive with these schedules. You know, this year's schedule is cupcake, you know, from now sitting today in February, you know, we can say that, but really there's no excuse for this program to be competing to get to 7 wins. You know, next year to me,
we better be back to a bowl game.
Yeah. The next year to me, the goal should be 8 games because of the schedule, you know, flat out. I mean, that schedule, I see 8 winnable games. I see 6 winnable games at home and 2 possibly that you can go on the road and steal, you know. So it's really, this is kind of almost a must-have year, I think, fans, because of what you have coming back. But there's no doubt that I think Sean has this thing. I don't want to call it rolling just yet, but the pieces are starting to fall in place for maybe some immediate success here in the next couple of years, just because of the recruiting, the depth. And now you're getting these new faces, this new juice in here, these guys that really seem like they're happy to be here, to have this opportunity. And you're seeing that respect that they're giving Sean. So really, really kind of excited. But, you know, I don't know how much you followed on recruiting, football recruiting, but I mean, this was a really, really decent class. You know, last year we were kind of like, well, You know, you got a couple names. You got some, you know, a couple guys that came in and played right away. You know, Kalon Beverly, you know, just to name a couple, you know, Sky Logan was another guy. But, you know, this class really, I don't see that many players that can come up and step up and make an impact right away. But you've got some quality depth that you can develop. And that's really what you want to do at this level, you know, yeah. Because you're not, like we mentioned, you're not going to get the 3-4-star guys, but you want to get these guys with Division I potential that can grow, that can get in that weight room to learn. And now 2-3 years when your Aaron Jones, your Alvin Joneses, and your Devin Cockrells, those guys, you know, start moving on. Now you're having, you know, a bunch of these recruits that, I mean, it's El Paso heavy, it's Texas heavy. That's really what I like to see, because we saw in the first couple of years, you know, they went out of state to try to get some size. Now you're seeing them really just attack recruiting areas that UTEP hasn't really attacked and executed that way. So it's, I think this recruiting cycle was very, very – was better than I thought it was, because we're sitting here in December with 10 recruits, 7 of them from El Paso. And I'm thinking, damn, dude, yeah. This is going to be – this ain't looking good. This just wasn't looking good. But the way that they were able to finish, they had 2 big recruiting weekends and they snagged some talented players. The first guy that jumps off the bat to me, Keith Sullivan, probably the highest rated guy, 6'7", 255 from Houston, Texas. That is another example of how the level of recruiting is going. This guy, we had no idea. You know, me and Angel really did, you know, we're kind of trying to stay on top of everything, but there's always those ones that slip. This was one of them, you know, but he basically was Texas Tech, Iowa State, and Boise State, you know, and he picked UTEP. That right there, that kid I think could come in. He's that Roy Robertson Harris type of replacement. You know, obviously different now with that 3-4, but that's the guy I think that can make a difference. The other guy these are the two headliners, and if you've been reading The Rush, you already know who they are. The other one is going to be the running back out of Baltimore, Maryland. Can't think of his name because I'm doing the show and, you know, it just doesn't flow as much, but Dupree, Antonio Dupree.
Jermaine Dupree,
yeah, right, where the party at. But Antonio Dupree, I mean, that's another guy where you're seeing the level of at least 2 3-star guys in this class, and they're legitimate 3-stars. I mean, this isn't just a recruiting service hyping these kids up. I think they're 2 legitimate 3-stars that can really come in. And not only that, you know, you need running backs. They got running backs.
Yeah, I think they saw last year what happened with the injuries and whatnot and started running very thin towards the end of the season. I think and that kind of shows through in the recruiting, because they definitely brought on a few headline by Dupree. And was it Quadres?
4 of the year. I mean, 2,500 yards and 45 touchdowns. Look, I don't care if it's freaking old man, 2-1-leg, bow-legged football. Dude, you're running for 2,500 yards and 45 tuds. Like in 13 games, like you didn't, like, that's ridiculous, man. I mean, and it's funny because, you know, you watch these kids and, you know, they look well, but a guy like Wadley, a guy like, you know, a guy like
Dupree, I go unnoticed, man.
They just look like, I can always tell because they look like men, like boys. Aaron Jones, if y'all want to really, really see how good Aaron Jones, like what I'm talking about, go watch Aaron Jones and how he's never tackled. He's just running by cats. Like, it'll be just a simple 28 sweep. The guard will miss the block, and Aaron Jones just sidesteps at full speed and then hits the sideline. It's like, you know, those are the guys that when you really watch film on these skill guys and you just see them just sprint past everybody, dominate. Like I said, somebody can miss 2 blocks and all they got to do is shift or just run past them. These 3 guys, they're really like that. Another guy, Walter Don, you know, I was so pissed that we didn't get to see Terry Janelle last year. Walter Don is like I don't want to call him – what's the fool from Sproles? I don't want to call him Darren Sproles, but he has that ability of being put in the slot, returning kicks, you know, being that type of offensive weapon. And I think that right there is really, they just upgraded their speed in so many areas. And then defensively as well, some of the linebackers, Colby McGarry, we talked about Sione Tio. They're going to need linebackers. That's really a concern of mine on the defensive side. I think they got a couple of guys that can maybe possibly fill in, talking maybe a guy like Sione Tiopu, but he can definitely use, you know, a redshirt year. Colby McGarry, 6-foot, 205-pounder from Cedar Hills, another guy that play that high-level type football like Tiopu, and, you know, maybe another guy like Dylan Parcy. I think Dylan Parcy from San Angelo is another guy that you're going to see because he's so long. You know, that you just – it's hard – you can't – it's hard to coach that type of lane. And when you watch his base on film, he just stays low. He moves very well laterally for a linebacker in a 3-4. And I think those are the guys, the handful of guys that you may see crack the depth chart this year. But, I mean, majority of this class, I think it's good enough to just kind of put away, redshirt these guys, grayshirt them, mess around with some scholarships. And talking with Sean Coogler today, they have two or three scholarships available for a JUCO guy, a late qualifier, you know, a transfer. So I don't think that I still think that they're going to add a couple more transfers before the season ends. You know, a guy like Terry Janelle, hopefully, another guy like that. You know, they need maybe one or two more offensive weapons, but they definitely need linebackers, you know, to really complete this whole transition to 3-4, which is, like we said, we'll just kind of wait and see mode with that. But so, I mean, just what are your outside thoughts on this recruiting thing? I mean, what kind of is it kind of improved? You followed recruiting.
I just feel like, look, I think every year for the past, I don't know how many years, 3-4 years, we've kind of felt like, even going back to the Price days, you know, we kind of felt like you get real excited, I guess you could say. You know,
I love you see
this stuff on paper. You see guys like Quadrez Wadley rush for 2,500 yards, and you know, you're like, dang, like, how does that happen? How does a guy go unnoticed like that? How do we get that guy? You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that these aren't good athletes. I'm not saying he won't do well, but I feel like we see that type of stuff over and over, and we kind of get into this like, man, this is one of the best recruiting classes we've seen in years, and really only time can tell.
Yep.
You know, because everything's different once you actually step onto the football field. I like that Sean Coogler has made it just it's just definitely something that he has made a priority in sticking to El Paso, in keeping the El Paso talent here locally, giving these guys scholarships, you know, not talking about just walk-ons. You know, back in the day, you know, you had even Price. I think Price was really the one that started doing this, you know, as far as recent memory.
Come try out and maybe we'll
Yeah, and you know, he had a few guys that he did recruit, some of the bigger names, but, you know, he brought a few El Paso guys in. A lot of them were walk-ons, though, but you're really seeing Sean Coogler go after these guys and recruit them like they deserve to be recruited. I mean, there is talent here. You know, it may go unnoticed to the rest of the country, but there is talent here, and Sean Coogler's starting to kind of tap into that, and that's a good thing, and he continues to do it. He's made it a priority. I like that he's keeping them here local. And I like the fact, like you're talking about, you bring in these guys, you know, that I can't even pronounce his name, Tayron
H.
You know, you bring in guys like this that can recruit the state of Texas, because that's one of the things that for pretty much all of UTEP football history, people have said couldn't be done. You know, how are you going to compete? When you talk to people about UTEP football and they talk about recruiting, they're like, well, how are you going to compete against UT and Houston and Texas A&M and all these other big schools, you know? You don't really have to. I mean, there's so much talent to go around, but you need the guys that are familiar with certain areas that are able to get out there. And, yeah, you may not get 4- and 5-star guys, but you're going to steal a couple 3-star here and there. You're going to find the ones that go unnoticed, and that's what you need. And so I like that this staff has kind of come to a point where they're very committed to the state of Texas, very committed to El Paso. And we do see a lot of talent, man. I mean, it's an exciting class. But, again, I feel like that every single year. I'm just like, you know, National Signing Day comes. You're like, oh, we got this guy, and we got this guy. He's a 3-star guy. And you're, like, expecting so much. You got to wait to see if it actually
and
pans out.
And especially with this class, because you have those guys. But at the same time, we may not, like I said, most of these guys, they're going to probably put away, because you have that ability now. You have so, I mean, this redshirt, I'm more excited about this redshirt freshman class from last year in the past 2 years, because then we'll really see, you know, like you said, you don't know right away.
Yeah.
But I think this particular class has that 2 to 3 year potential where you're seeing maybe 10 to 12 guys from this class, like actually, you know, making a difference, not, you know, maybe not all conference type guys, but package guys, you know, specialty guys. And I think this is what I think each class is what Coogler wants. Like you mentioned last year, if we can hit on 10 to 12 of these guys every year, we're doing something right.
Yep.
This class, I think you hit on no less than 12. You know what I mean? Now, maybe not this year. Like I mentioned, there may be 5 to 7 guys that may see the field this year, but I think in this class, no less than 12 of these guys are going to be hits, and you will see them at some point make an impact. But you know, I mentioned, I just love seeing the level of recruit that we're going after and the area that we're going after, and that's really kind of promising to you know, like people say, compete with these type of Texas schools, UTSA. You know, that's really more the competition.
Were you just gonna say UTSA?
That's more the competition. North Texas, UTSA, all those fools.
We
you know,
we shouldn't compete with those guys, man.
We shouldn't, but that's just the truth, my brother, and I only speak the truth. So,
oh, man.
So now let's preview the Pope, His Holiness.
I hope none of y'all are going out there to see that.
Man,
I shouldn't say that.
If you go out there, hope you have a plan to avoid traffic and not
get hit.
Well,
be like, what, a million people? I mean, the estimates started at hundreds of thousands. They're up to like a million people.
It's
going to
be more,
like,
than, be more than people.
I mean,
bro.
I'm just going to stay home.
That's why I'm glad I work in the Northeast, live in the Northeast.
I don't work. So I don't have to do anything, man. I just wake up, maybe go eat some breakfast with my wife and, you know, wait for Thursday to come and check out these minors and see what happens in basketball, man. I mean, I hate getting my hopes up, you know. I hate starting to – well, I can't say I hate it. It just sucks that I feel like I'm going to, like, get let down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you start getting your hopes up and you're like, all right, they're starting to play well. And then I just feel like I'm just setting myself up for an even bigger letdown, man. I don't even know what to expect anymore.
I think I can guarantee that. Doc will come here and get his ass whooped.
Well,
Saturday, but then,
you know, you talk about Louisiana Tech, Old Dominion, you got Charlotte. I just
big stretch, man. I mean, it's about confidence, it's about gelling, and you know, even though you're in a half bag, it's about them conference standings right now. But
well, I can say one thing: you didn't skip a beat, man. I'm rusty as hell. I'm tired. You know, it's like. Before, when we used to get to the hour and a half mark is when I started losing. I couldn't even talk anymore. I just didn't even know how to, like, the words just wouldn't come out. Now we hit 45 minutes, and I'm just, like, falling asleep, dude. But
it's good
to be back and with another episode of Rush. Hope you all enjoyed it. You all know where to find us, and when I say us, I mean Alex. I'll be out there trying to help out as much as possible, but you know where to find this guy's great work, MinorRush.com, SBNMinorRush@gmail.com, Facebook.com/MinorRush. At SBN Minor Rush on Twitter. Did I say that?
That's right. You got it right.
I can't even remember your Papi Chulo Instagram account.
Oh, no, it's hidden now. Too many stalkers. Ever since I've grown this thing, bro, it's been crazy.
Peace.